When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. There's Charles W. Chuck Bryant. There's Jerry. And this is Stuff You Should Know, featuring my enormous stopped-up nose.
And how appropriate.
Yeah, well, that was one of the reasons why I wanted to do this one.
I figured.
I'm a little sick right now.
Yeah.
Still. And I wanted to know more about the monster inside me.
That's right. Like, I'm not feeling great, and knowledge is power, like we always say.
Exactly. Like, just from researching this, I was, like, starting to break a sweat and tremble, yeah. And I was like, I'm getting better.
And then I passed out and hit my head.
Yeah, and I didn't have enough time to finish studying. So
oh, good.
I'm going to have to make a lot of this up, Chuck.
Cool. Yeah, we covered Ebola recently.
Yeah.
And we are definitely going to cover HIV at some point. Mm-hmm. We just haven't gotten around to it.
Yeah.
But both of those are viruses.
There's another one we talked about that seemed to come up in this. I don't remember what it was, but...
The herpes? No?
No. We never talked about herpes.
Well, you know, not mixed company.
What was it? I don't remember, but there was definitely...
Microbiome, maybe?
Yeah, no. I don't remember what it was, but we've talked about viruses and viral infections. But I think viruses are one of the most fascinating things on the entire planet.
They're jerks.
Like, we don't know where they came from.
Yeah.
We don't quite know how to classify them because they really kind of operate on the line between a living and a non-living thing.
Yeah, this article said, like, most scientists agree, but I found a lot of people that said that they're not living things, too, so.
Yeah.
But who cares, really?
They still definitely have an effect.
You know?
The weird thing is about a virus is why some people say it's living and some people say it's non-living is that to be a living thing, you have to have something like...
Arms?
Yeah. You have to have arms.
Yeah.
A rock? Rocks don't have arms.
Nope.
Point proven.
Yep. You have to
be able to carry out the processes that keep you alive.
Like self-sustaining.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like you, a cell. A
sure.
cell is the smallest living organism. It's the smallest possible living organism because you get lower than that and you have maybe the things that make up a cell, but they can't sustain themselves. A cell can sustain itself.
Yeah.
And things can be made up of cells like us.
Yeah.
And therefore, we are a living organism. The cells that make us up are living organisms. Plants are living organisms. But viruses, they don't have any means of carrying out the processes that keep them alive.
Yeah.
Which doesn't matter because they're not alive. But more important, they don't have any processes that allow them to reproduce.
Yeah, they're just like by themselves that they're not worth very much. They need to glom on. They're always glomming on to everyone else's junk.
Exactly.
Which is basically what a virus does.
But for something as simple as a virus is, and we'll talk about how simple they are in a second, they have devastating effects.
Yeah.
When they do start to really get busy.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
So, Chuck, I was saying, like, they don't know exactly where viruses came from. They know they're very old.
Yeah.
But there are a couple theories. My favorite one, probably the one that's right, is that they were former bits of cells that basically evolved into freelance renegades.
Really?
Yeah, which explains why certain viruses fit with certain cells.
Oh, well, that makes sense.
Uh-huh.
Huh.
So they could have just been basically like drifting genetic material that, that evolved enough to say, ah, I'm going to learn to reproduce by hijacking.
Renegade drifters?
Yep.
So are you saying that viruses are John Rambo?
Pretty much. So let's talk about, like, what makes a virus.
Yeah, well, like you said, a cell is on its own. It can do its own thing. Viruses cannot. Mm-hmm. Viruses are super tiny, about 1/1,000,000 of an inch long, which is 1,000 times smaller than bacteria, which are smaller than human cells, most of them.
There are some, viruses that are actually larger than the average size bacteria, but for
oh,
the
really?
Most part, they are smaller.
Which is still super tiny.
Sure it is.
Like you need an electron microscope to view these bad boys.
Right. And they can infect just about any living thing. As a matter of fact, any living thing could be theoretically infected by a virus. Like a bacteria can get a viral infection.
Man, that's crazy.
Isn't that crazy?
I don't even know what that means.
Seaweed can get viruses.
Yeah.
Donkeys.
Yeah.
All sorts of stuff. The whole gamut from seaweed to donkeys.
The virus itself, if you just want to look at what that little tiny particle is it's a virion? Is that how we're going to say that?
Virion?
Virion?
Yeah, why didn't they just leave the second I out in viron?
Yeah,
it'd
I don't
be
know.
So much better.
Basically what it is a set of genetic instructions. It can be either DNA or RNA. It can't be both. And it's, you know, it's just instructions. That's all it is.
Well, that's the nucleic acid that is part of a virion. Like a virion is like a particle. It's like an individual viral particle.
Yeah.
And part of that is the nucleic acid.
Yeah, and that's surrounded by capsid, which is just a protein coating to protect it. And then sometimes, if it's an enveloped virus, it will also have an envelope around that capsid. If it's naked, it doesn't need, or I guess it just doesn't have that other protein coat.
Right, and the enveloped ones are enveloped with this a lipid, a fat of some sort.
Yeah.
But for a naked virus, it's made up of two things. It's got its nucleic acid and its protein coating that protects the nucleic acid. So it's not just nucleic acid floating around.
That's right.
And the nucleic acid is, like you said, it's basically just a blueprint for how to make more viruses.
Yeah.
Because if, speaking teleologically, a virus is, its whole purpose is to make more viruses.
Yeah.
That's all it cares about. And
yeah.
You can say, well, that applies to just about any living organism if you get down to the bare bones.
Oh, just to but propagate?
Yeah. With the virus, it's like, that's it, man.
Yeah.
It's not doing anything else. It doesn't care about playing cards. It doesn't want to do anything but reproduce.
And make you sick.
Yeah.
Pretty much. Their shape varies a lot, but there are basically three types. Helical. It's like a tube.
Mm-hmm.
You got your polyhedrals. It's sort of like a soccer ball.
Neat.
And then you have your complex shapes, and they are complex. They can look crazy. They can have tails. They can have crazy-looking spider legs.
Like the what?
They have both.
Which one looks like the Apollo lunar lander?
I'm going to go with complex.
I would guess
I don't know that for sure,
too.
But
yeah.
I don't think it could be polyhedral.
It's startling how much it looks like that.
Yeah.
It looks like it was made to look like a cool little lunar lander.
Or that the lunar lander was modeled after the virus.
Maybe.
Which didn't make much, because they wanted to infect the moon.
I guess so. Which we may have.
Astronaut jokes. So unlike cells that can do their own thing, viruses don't have enzymes like cells do that basically allow it to operate independently as their own little units.
Some do. Some viruses contain just enough enzymes to take their DNA or their RNA and do something with it to basically prime it to be transcribed or something like that. Or they have enzymes that go hijack the enzymes in the cell.
Yeah.
So some do, most don't.
Right.
But that's the whole point of infecting a host cell. If all a virus wants to do is reproduce, but it can't reproduce, that's where the host cell comes in.
That's right. They basically move into the factory and say, we're going to use your equipment.
Right. They're like,
hope you don't mind.
There's going to be some big changes around here.
Yeah.
Because there's a new sheriff in town.
And it wants to kill you.
The virus.
Yeah. Although all viruses don't kill people. We should point that out.
No. And so depending on what kind of virus it is, whether it's naked or enveloped.
Yes.
It will attach itself to the host cell, mm-hmm. and either inject it. If it's naked, it has to stay outside the host cell.
Yeah.
And it basically injects its genetic material into the host cell.
Yeah.
Or if it's enveloped, that fat lipid coating that makes it an enveloped virus basically connects to the host cell's own fat lipid coating, and that protein coated virus can basically slip through, just absorb right into the cell and say ta-da when it makes it on the inside.
Yeah, is that what an antigen is? I think that's the protein that has to match, like the antigen looks for another like protein so it can get that tight bond. And if they're not similar enough, they can't bond and infect that cell. I might be wrong on that. Is that right?
I don't know if that's it sounds right. And the reason it sounds right is because I saw elsewhere in research that that's why viruses go after specific kinds of cells.
Oh, okay.
They recognize the type of cells that they're capable of infecting.
Right, and say, I can bind to you very tightly, my friend.
Exactly, so let's watch.
So let's dance.
Exactly.
All right, right after this message, we are going to get down to the nitty-gritty on what happens once they have bound themselves to that cell. Stuff you should
know. All right, game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
All right, Josh, they moved into the cell. Mm-hmm. They like the looks of it. It's a nice open concept floor plan, which everyone loves these days.
Right.
What happens from there?
Well, it depends on the virus. So let's say it was one that injected it. It's got its genetic material floating around. Maybe there's an enzyme that's assisting the genetic material. Or if the virus itself showed up, it's releasing its genetic material all over the place. But basically what happens is...
That sounds pretty gross.
Yeah. Well, it is pretty gross.
Like a teenage boy.
It happens exactly like you think.
Yeah.
But the once inside the cell, you'll see a lot that a virus hijacks the cell's processes.
Yeah, like, hey, we need to use your deal because we don't have our own.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The reason people use the word hijack is because it really gets the point across, but it's also because science isn't 100% on how viruses do it.
Yeah.
And what they think basically is that if there's an accompanying enzyme or something,
yeah,
the enzymes basically wait for a line of other enzymes, the cell's own enzymes, to go past, and then it grabs the last one in the line.
That old trick.
It hits it over the head.
Yeah.
Hypnotizes it.
Is this Blazing then, Saddles?
Basically. And then sends it back out to go recruit other enzymes. And then all of a sudden, the cell is, it's enzymes, it's workers. If you think of the enzymes as like the workers in the cell.
Yeah.
They're all working for this virus.
Sure.
And the cell's like, what the heck's going on? It's too late. The enzymes are focused on transcribing the DNA, which ultimately just makes more DNA or RNA for the virus, and then assembling it with proteins that the enzymes are now making. So they're now making more and more and more viruses.
It's a hostile takeover.
It is very much a hostile takeover. That's one way to go. There's another thing called a retrovirus, which I'm a huge fan of.
Okay.
Some of the worst viruses around are retroviruses.
Yeah.
Which is ironic because they actually have the softest impact on the host cell. But a retrovirus goes in, very quietly hangs around.
Yeah, with their 80s clothing and...
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because HIV is a retrovirus.
Sure.
So is, I think, flu. Flu's a retrovirus too, I think. But it goes in and it just inserts its DNA into the cell's DNA.
All right.
So it's like, hey, go about your business or whatever, but now there's this extra sequence that when you go over it and you transcribe it and you do what this DNA or this genetic material is telling you to do and to make, you're going to also, as a byproduct, spit out viruses.
So it's just duplicating itself.
It is. So that's there's a lot of different things that can go on, but it's like you said, there's a hostile takeover or the cell is tricked into making more viruses. But what happens is more and more and more and more viruses are being made within the host cell, which can be pretty bad for the host cell ultimately.
Well, yeah, because eventually the virus is going to leave and they can either, if it's a naked virus, it'll bust out and just destroy the host cell and be like, hey, I'm tired of your little apartment.
Yeah.
I'm just going to burn it down. Because I'm my own thing now.
Right.
And I can live on my own. Or if it's a envelope virus, then it'll just kind of pinch away and keep that protective cell membrane and just be like, well, fine, I'll just take my stuff and leave and you're free to do what you want.
Right. Well, that's another reason why retroviruses are easy on the host cell is because all retroviruses are enveloped viruses.
Yeah.
So these newly made viruses just move to the outside membrane and bud off.
Yeah.
And then what happens when they bud off or when the cell breaks open because there's so many new viruses, it ruptures the cell.
Yeah.
Which is pretty horrific if you think about it.
I know.
All of a sudden, you're contagious.
Yeah, and it's duplicating and spreading all throughout your body at a pretty rapid rate.
Yeah.
Lots of these guys. So let's look at your... Well, let's look at you, for instance.
Okay.
What have you got right now?
I got something, some sort of viral infection.
Just a cold, not the flu, probably.
Yeah.
Are you achy, fevery?
No.
Feverish, I mean.
Uh-uh. So what do I have, Doc?
Well, I would say you have a cold.
Okay.
But I had a cold that turned into a sinus infection.
I may have one of those from the color of the stuff that's coming out of my nose. I would say I probably have a sinus infection.
Yes. Would you describe it as khaki?
I would describe it as a drab olive.
Oh, man.
Way worse than khaki.
Whew. When I was sick a couple of weeks ago, I had some serious bright, bright, almost fluorescent yellow coming out.
Yeah.
Which is all very gratifying to get rid of. Mm-hmm. Either with your neti pot or just blowing your nose or whatever.
Yeah, I've been neti potting like a madman.
Yeah. You know, you can overdo that when you're sick, apparently.
Right? Yeah. I can imagine because the salt.
Yeah.
Too much salt up there.
And I think just fluid, like unless you really, really get it all out, it's better to, like you need to dry out completely in between.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah.
I definitely am.
All right. We'll just... Take two of these and come back and see me next week.
Well, you're diagnosing me. What was going on?
Oh, well, you've got a cold, I think. But let's say you're in the office.
I think we should make this as real as possible. Let's say that I'm hanging out with my sweet little 4-year-old niece who herself has a cold.
Oh, is she the person?
I don't want to name names. But I think it's entirely possible.
But she's on your list now? So, all right. So your little niece probably sneezed or something, or just put her dirty little hands all over your face because she loves Uncle Josh.
Her dad would not allow her to have dirty hands.
Okay.
I think she's probably just coughing around me.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what you probably did was inhaled a virus particle, and that probably attached to the linings of your nasal passages and your sinuses.
Because apparently there's basically only three ways that a virus gets into your body. You inhale it.
Yep.
It attaches to your mucous membranes, like your nose or your gums or something.
Yeah,
yeah. Or it enters through a break in the skin.
That's right. So your host cell is going to break open. your virus is going to move in there with and say, I'm going to use your equipment like we talked about. Then maybe travel to your bloodstream, travel to your lungs, and you're going to end up getting, let's say, maybe one of the first signs is a runny nose because you're losing cells in your sinuses, and now that fluid is going to be loosened up as a result.
Yeah, the literal cellular lining of my sinuses is rupturing.
It's under attack.
Because here's the thing, when you go through and look at like what a virus does, you're looking at what one individual virion is doing.
Yeah.
You don't necessarily just pick up one individual virion. You can be exposed to many, many, many virions, and they are each producing thousands more just in one cell.
Yeah.
So all this is going on, it can have a pronounced effect. Like if you just lost one cell in your nasal lining, it's not going to do much. You're probably never, ever going to notice. But if you lose a ton of the cells at the same time, you're going to have a runny nose.
Yeah.
Or if it happens in your throat, you're going to have a sore throat.
That's right. That's just fluid, you know, it's attacking those cells in your throat in the lining, and it's dripping and just causing like a, usually some sort of inflammation.
Yeah. And because those ruptured cells are being carried down by your nose juice to the back of your throat, that's what I was raised on.
Mucus.
Which in turn, nose juice.
Okay.
Which in turn, they attach and attack to the cells lining your throat. And then this whole thing is just going on and on and on again.
Yeah. If you've ever had aches and pains, because of maybe a flu, that's because your muscle cells are being attacked. And it sucks because you don't know that this is going on at first. Like it's just this war being waged inside your body. And you're like, you know, hey, I'm just going to the grocery store and I'm feeling pretty good.
Exactly.
And by the time you start to feel it, it's too late.
It is too late. I'm glad you brought that up because I did a Don't Be Dumb on when you're actually contagious.
Yeah. What's the final on that?
So it depends on.
Does it vary?
How long you're contagious varies. But when you start is about a day before you start showing symptoms.
Okay.
So, like, remember how I said if you have one cell burst and you're not going to notice it, it's going to take many, many cells to burst before you finally have a sore throat? Well, while those things are bursting, after that first one bursts, you're contagious, buddy.
Yeah.
So for a day before you even know you're sick, you're walking around infecting other people.
Right.
With a cold, you go from the day before symptoms to about 4 days after.
All right.
And with the flu, you go from the day before symptoms to 5 to 7 days after.
Gotcha.
So you can still be, it is true when people are like, I'm not contagious anymore. They're usually probably totally wrong.
Yeah.
But say their flu lasts 8 days.
If
they say that on day eight, they're actually right.
Right.
Most people say it by like day three or four or whatever. That's not right.
Well, they need to watch Don't Be Dumb, Josh's award-winning web series.
So many awards, man.
I think the next award it's going to win is the most divisive web series.
Yeah.
Because more than half, I think, are like, man, this is the best thing ever. And half the people are like, I don't get it. Why is Josh acting so weird?
Yeah.
And I'll just respond with, yeah, you don't get it.
Yeah. And I mean, it's definitely not for everybody, I've learned.
Well, it's very funny, I think.
Chuckers.
Sure. So, all right. And we mentioned fever. We're going to talk about what that is actually doing inside your body right after this break.
All right. Game off. Let's pause here to talk more about Monopoly Go. Because in Monopoly Go, you can team up with your friends for timed tournaments where you work together to build up each other's boards. It's very nice.
That's right. And the more you win together, the more awesome prizes you unlock. And there's so much to get. I'm talking about unique stickers that you can trade with friends to complete albums for big prizes, cool new playing pieces to travel the boards with, or hilarious emojis for taunting friends when you smash their buildings or heist their vaults.
Plus, Monopoly Go feels new and exciting every day with constantly changing tournaments and challenges, like digging for treasure or a robot pachinko machine. And there's always new timed events that help you win big, like massive multipliers for everything you win or rent frenzies.
That's right. There's always something fun to discover in Monopoly Go. So get off the bench and go download it now for free on Google Play or the App Store. Game on.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a Gagillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
So, Chuck, it turns out you asked me if I feel feverish, and I don't. Apparently, my body's slacking on the immune response.
Well, I think you don't always get the fever, but fever is a good thing because your body is wired to operate optimally at 98.6, even though I heard that was 98.7 now. Is that right?
Yeah, I heard that they've abandoned that as like an average body temperature because it varies enough between human beings that they're like, now it's this between this.
Right.
Rather than 98.6. And if you don't have that, you're sick.
So somewhere in that range, let's say, chemical reactions and basically anything going on in your body, just that's the temperature it likes. So when you get a fever, it's actually slowing all those processes down, including the virus's spread.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh man, it's hot. I can't work as much.
That's right. Which is kind of a weird indirect roundabout way of slowing a fever down or slowing an infection down.
But, yeah.
I mean, I guess if it works.
So it's good to have a fever.
It is good to have a fever. And it actually makes sense in a strange way because some infections, some viruses attack the very cells that are meant to mount the immune response. Like, remember Ebola?
Yeah.
It goes right after, like, every immune response cell it can find. HIV goes after T cells, which attack and destroy foreign bodies. So to slow them down and to slow the spread so that the immune response can continue and mount a full attack is kind of clever.
Yeah, and since you mentioned HIV, it's another scary one because it's one of those viruses that can just lay and wait, and they even call it sleeping at sometimes, you know, like it's not obvious. You could have HIV and be spreading HIV without ever feeling any kind of sick or any kind of symptoms. And, basically eventually that virus is going to do its thing. You know, it could lay and wait for years even. Without acting.
Right. And it depends on the virus, but they figure that there's some sort of environmental trigger. One I saw was like exposure to UV light or something like
that.
But it's the same thing. Herpes, is a virus like that. It sleeps, which is why people who have like, say, herpes simplex.
Sure.
Don't always have cold sores.
Yeah, it'll just flare up.
Right, it will flare up. And they often say, like, in times of stress or something like that. Well,
yeah.
The virus isn't like, oh, this person's stressed out, let's go. There's probably cortisol triggers the
right.
virus to start reproducing. But one of the devious aspects of this is when that virus sneaks in and inserts its DNA or RNA into the DNA of the cell and just hangs back and waits. Well, that cell is dividing as like normal
so
again and again.
Spreading the virus unwittingly.
Right. Without the virus even being reproduced.
Yeah.
It's now set up to be reproduced rather than in just one cell.
Yeah.
Now 4 or 8 or 16 or 32. And then all hell breaks loose when all of them start going at the same time because they were all exposed to cortisol.
Wow.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Viruses are amazingly interesting.
And wicked. Wicked, wicked things.
They are.
So here are some tips. The way on, you know, if your office is sick or you're around your 4-year-old niece, here's some tips from your buddies here to keep you from getting sick. You know that there are carrier organisms like mosquitoes and fleas. They can spread viruses. We know it can be airborne. We already talked about bodily fluids, whether that's nose juice or saliva or blood or semen or vaginal secretions. That's one way you can get a direct transfer.
Sure.
Surfaces on which bodily fluids have dried, which is kind of scary to think about.
Yeah.
You know?
You like, want to keep all those secretions, like, off of surfaces because the virus can live outside of the body for a while. Apparently, flu virus can live for 7 days just on the surface.
Yeah, that's why, like, you sneeze into your hand and you open the door to your office, then there could be little virus on that doorknob. And that's why they super advise, and one of the things that we're advising now is to wash your hands a lot if you're sick or if you know that there is sickness around you.
Right.
Like, I wouldn't be Howard Hughes about it, but I wash my hands a lot when I know that there's viruses going around.
I started washing my hands a lot more once I found out or was told what you're actually doing when you're washing your hand. You're not actually killing anything on your hands, any germs. What you're doing by introducing soap is you're creating something that will basically go and cling to germs on your hands.
Right.
And then when you wash off the soap, you're washing off the germs. So you're not like waging war or anything like that.
Right.
You're basically just rinsing your hands clean, literally.
Yeah.
So once I realized that, I was like, oh yeah, washing hands makes a lot of sense. Cause before that, I was like, soap doesn't do anything.
Really?
You know? Yeah. Like, and I don't even use antibacterial soap as a rule, but so I was like, it's definitely not doing anything.
Yeah.
Now I'm like, it is doing something. So let's wash our hands as often as possible.
That's a good idea.
And a really long t-shirt.
If you are sick, you are going to want to cover your mouth when you sneeze and cough because that's just common decency.
Mm-hmm.
You want to avoid contact with anyone else's bodily fluids, whether you're sick or not. And whether they're sick or not, it's just, you don't want to have anyone else's bodily fluids on you or in you.
Yeah.
Unless, you know, you're like married or something.
Right. Then unless you really love that person.
Then fluids are welcome. And antibiotics.
Man, this thing's gotten blue a few times.
It's a very sexy show.
Yeah. Sexy virus.
Antibiotics aren't going to help with, a viral infection. That is obviously for bacterial infections only.
Yes, but it occurred to me, Chuck, that if you could cure a viral infection in a bacteria with antibiotics, it would be kind of like euthanasia.
Right.
But it would cure the viral infection.
That's a good point.
A bacteria infected with the virus. That's how tough viruses are. And we have no idea how they originated or where they came from. We don't.
That's true.
We just know they're super old. And the ones that are the oldest are the ones that kill the least.
Oh, really?
Yeah. If you think about it, a virus would, just by right of natural selection,
mm-hmm.
evolve to be able to reproduce without killing the host.
Yeah.
Because if the host survives, then that just increases the chances of the virus to be spread from host to host, right? So a really deadly virus is probably newer as far as humanity's concerned. And a virus that can infect more organisms, more types of organisms, like one that could make grass sick, but also make a human sick. That's probably a pretty old virus.
Yeah. Old virus just sounds intimidating.
Well, we have like basically what amounts to fossilized viruses in our DNA from all those viruses, those retroviruses that came in, inserted its genetic material, and our body learned to mount a defense against them. But that stuff is still in the human genome.
Crazy.
Viruses.
There are also immunizations, of course, and you know how they work. They pre-infect your body so it knows, you know, how to mount the fight against it.
Right.
To make sure it has all the right equipment.
It's like putting up wanted posters in your body.
Yeah, but those viruses change slightly, ever so slightly enough to where you have to keep updating these vaccines so you know it keeps working.
Well, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. They evolve fairly quickly. Lastly, Chuck, I want to address something. There is a misconception or urban legend or whatever that you can tell whether you have a viral infection or a bacterial infection. Or what kind of virus you have based on the color of your mucus. We talked about khaki or fluorescent or something like that. They don't in and of themselves relate to a specific type of virus or bacterial or viral infection or anything like that. It's not true. So that's viruses.
Yeah, I got nothing else. It is good to know how this stuff works though, because, you know, when you get sick, you understand it a little better. Maybe you can mentally fight this stuff more effectively.
I'm doing it right now.
Yeah.
Do you see how I'm bleeding from my scalp?
Oh, my God.
I'm using a lot of mental power.
It's amazing.
If you want to know more about viruses, you can start by typing that word into the search bar at howstuffworks.com, and it will bring up this cool article. And I said, How Stuff Works, so it's time for listener mail.
I'm going to call this Headstones. My name is Georgia Gilbert. I'm a new but enthusiastic fan from the University of Washington. Go Huskies.
Yeah.
I was listening to your Tombstones podcast, and I want to say that the move to churchyard burials is a bit more complicated than you implied. If I remember correctly, burials in churchyards began mostly as a common practice because of the plague. Churches would sell spots for burial within the church itself, in the walls, in the floors, etc., because there was a common belief during the Middle Ages that being buried in a church was being buried closer to God. Hmm. And if you're buried closer to God, the better off you're going to be in the afterlife, the reasoning goes. Many people would actually get spots within their local church to be buried, or at least very close to the walls outside. During the plague years, however, the amount of bodies accumulated to be buried became too much, and they began to bury people further outside the church, even if they had paid for a spot inside. I read a great book on death in London through the ages that talked about it that was called Necropolis. I highly recommend it. So thanks for teaching me such awesome stuff, guys. I can now ask my mother-in-law intelligent questions about growing up in Germany during the Cold War, thanks to your Berlin Wall program.
Nice.
And that is from Georgia.
That was fascinating. The plague, by the way, was bacterial, not viral.
Oh, yeah?
In case anybody was wondering, like me.
Yeah, we did one on the plague, right?
Black
plague?
We did.
Yeah.
Black Death or Black Plague, yeah. Anyway, who was that again?
Georgia.
Thanks a lot, Georgia. We appreciate that. That was a great email. If you have a great email, you can try to tweet it to us if it's short at SYSK Podcast. You can post it on Facebook if you like at facebook.com/stuffyoushouldknow. Or you can send us an email like a normal person to stuffpodcast@howstuffworks.com. And as always, in the meantime, hang out with us at our home on the web, stuffyoushouldknow.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.